Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, the first of the year. So, Happy New Year's. Happy 2014 to all you Punk News Podcast listeners. Let's get this party started. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I am here with my partner in crime, the man that I think represents the New Year's baby in its most essence. He's youthful. He's excited. He's looking forward to the future.
Completely naked.
It is completely naked. I am here with managing editor, the Don Dada, Adam White. Adam, what's happening?
Oh, I'm just trying to survive this year.
Well, how have your first 2 days been?
Pretty good, actually. I feel really good about this year. It's kind of snowing like hell outside, and it's really cold, and I like that because I like it when winter is actually winter and not some sort of wet pseudo winter. So I'm good.
Adam, down here in the PA, in the Philadelphia, we've had extremely uneven temperatures for the past 3 weeks. It literally went from like 60 to like 20 in like 3 days, and then back up and then back down again. How has the temperature been up in Niagara?
It has been all over the place too. We had snow on Christmas, which was cool. But now then it got warm again, and now we're in the middle of this snowstorm right now. We're weird. We're in kind of like a little shielded microclimate because of all the lakes and rivers and waters and shit around us. So it's always warmer in Niagara than it is kind of like everywhere else. I mean, like we're just a little bit away from Buffalo, and Buffalo always gets slammed compared to us. And just because of where Buffalo is, what side of the lake they're on. So, you know, it's okay. If I look like, what is it right now? Temperature right now. And I convert this to Fahrenheit because you guys use funny temperature. Right now it would be what, 7 Fahrenheit.
That's pretty. Nah, I can't be right.
Does that make sense? I looked up Niagara Falls, New York, because I assumed that they would just give me the Fahrenheit.
Well, maybe it is. Adam, have we become old men being so concerned with the temperature? You know, old guys are like, you know, might snow tomorrow. Damn, it is 7 degrees in where you are. Damn.
Is that bad? Is that good?
That's low.
I don't know.
That's low, man. That's like really, really cold.
No, because I look at 7 and I think 7 Celsius, and I'm like, oh, I could take my coat off. But...
That's really cold, Adam. That's really cold. Apparently, it's going to be 0 degrees where you are tonight. Damn.
Yeah. So, anyways, but I don't think we're getting the worst of it. Like, I think like Boston has a lot more snow.
Who cares?
I don't feel
Boston.
Old talking about. So, well, I feel old talking about everything right now. But I mean, in Canada, that's all you do is you complain in the winter that it's not the summer, and you complain in the summer that it's not the winter. So that's just kind of part and parcel of what we do.
Well,
not like those people in California that are just like fucking zombies and it's the same temperature all the time.
Right now,
like that's not healthy.
Right now in Santa Cruz, which is sort of the beach, this is actually where Mike Park of Asian Man Records is as we speak. I think Baboso of Shinobu is there and some other people. 75 degrees in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is a pretty sweet place. It's kind of like a beach that's sort of close to San Francisco, and it's got like a boardwalk and an amusement park on it, like on the boardwalk and a video arcade. And man, I wish I was there right now. I love Santa Cruz, except it's got like a million meth addicts running around, which is really annoying.
Hmm. That was sounded really good until that. So
yeah. So if you want sunshine, hot dogs, good times, and or meth, go visit Santa Cruz.
Well, speaking of meth, that was cruel. I didn't want to throw that this way. So it's year endless time. We all decided that instead of paying attention to our loved ones, we were going to decide which records we liked this year and in which order. And then we put that on the internet for people to yell at us about, which is what we do and have done for a while. And I don't even really know why we do it, because I'm not exactly sure what the anything is about it. But people seem to care. I keep reading comments from people, like in between all of the hate, I keep reading comments that'll say things like, I've learned about so many records over the years through the Punk News lists. Which is, I don't know, sort of weird to me. I mean, it's awesome, but I'm surprised anyone other than us reads them.
Well, I mean, honestly, it seems to me that 2013 was the year where it was cool to hate on top 10 lists. You know, you see, I saw a lot of things on social media, people being like, you know, top 10 lists are stupid. I hate them. And half of them were like, top 10 lists are stupid, but I'm going to do it anyway, so it's okay. You know, which, but let me tell you, Punk News people, I'm a huge fan of the top 10, the top 20, for two reasons. First of all, nothing's wrong with being excited about music. I love telling people about music I like, because I love music, and I love talking about it. I mean, that's why I write about music. So nothing wrong with the top 10 list. It's just a way to say, hey, here's some really neat records that I really liked. But also, it's a great way to get exposed to stuff. Every year, I get exposed to stuff through people's top 10 lists. So it's a great way to share and connect with music. I see nothing wrong with a top 10 list. People are like, oh, it's indulgent. Well, a top 10 list isn't any more indulgent than a conversation with anybody else. So I think people are just kind of jumping on the bandwagon being anti-top 10 lists and then writing about them. So I'm pro-top 10 list, baby. I love them.
I think part of the problem is that the internet in general, because of fucking BuzzFeed and everything else, has ruined lists of stuff. So, there's a little bit of a tradition, at least, to doing a top 10 or a top 20 list of media at the end of the year. So whether you're into film or music or whatever else, but all of these bizarre arbitrary lists that people write now because they've decided that like it's better SEO and that like more people are going to click on them, where you'll have like the top 7 reasons you're going to be wearing a duster hat this fall, like right where it's not, there's no. Like 7 doesn't mean anything. There's like, it could have just been an article called why you're going to wear a duster hat this fall. But that's even kind of link baity. It back in like in the days when everything was sane, it would have been like an article called like duster hats, the new headwear of the fall. And that would have been it. But then they were like, people don't want to actually read. But if we say, hey, 7 reasons why you'll wear a duster hat this fall, people are like able to mentally go, oh, there's 7 of them. I can just page through them one at a time. If number 6 doesn't appeal to me, I know there's one after that. Right? It's the same fucking length of text, but because they put numbers beside some of it, everyone's like, oh, hey, I'm going to read this. So anyways, this is your fault, internet. Fuck you.
Adam, what were your top 3 records? We'll get to the editorial list, and we'll get to the Punk News crew list. But what were your top 3 records of the year, and why? Just briefly.
What were my top 3 records of the year? I don't even remember my top 3. No, okay. So my top 3
Taylor
records.
Swift.
What's the other one?
Bieber, Justin Bieber.
Justin.
Jonas Brothers solo records.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know who to make fun of anymore. Okay. So my number 3 was a one-man band out of, I don't know if it's Moncton, New Brunswick, somewhere New Brunswick. Anyways, called Shotgun Jimmy. If you're Canadian and you like weird Canadian indie rock, you've heard of Shotgun Jimmy. He used to be in a band called Shotgun and Jaybird a little while ago. Anyways, Jim plays this kind of like crazy, super charming, lo-fi, just little pop songs, little rock songs that he puts together. This latest record was like super self-referential about things that are in the Canadian music industry. There's a song about the Canadian rock band Lady Hawk that was on the record. And it was awesome because it was just like full of references to Lady Hawk songs. And I don't know, it was on You've Changed Records, one of my favorite little record labels, which is the label out of Wellentier that's run by Dan Romano from formerly of Attack in Black, now a crazy country singer, and Steve Lamke, who is from the Constantines and now plays as Baby Eagle. They put out good stuff. It's a good record. It's a really good live show. I'm super charmed by all that. So yeah, Shotgun Jimmy. The record was called Everything, Everything. That was number 3. Number 2 was Pissed Jeans Honeys. Pissed Jeans is amazing. I could listen to them every day, and I do. Just growly, super angry, kind of grungy, muddy punk songs that are about completely mundane things that adults get annoyed about that are of no consequence to like the world. So there's angry, angry songs on there about having to go to the doctor and being allergic to cat fur. And I don't know, like there's this one part where like in this super grungy voice, he just like grumbles out like stick figure families on the back of a car. Like that's the thing that he's really angry about. And I don't know. I love it. I don't know. It's
Adam. You said that like Rob Zombie would.
Stick, I know, I did.
On the back of a car. Well, Dracula.
Well, it is a little bit, I don't want to say it's Rob Zombie-ish, but it's like, it's it's almost like hilariously artificially angry about these things. Like by no means should there be angry punk songs written about the subject matter that this record is about, but at the same time it doesn't play like parody. I think they're a super interesting band just because they're like, we're going to be angry about stuff that people are actually annoyed with and not about, you know,
existential angst
or politics that we, yeah, it's super interesting. I like it. And my number one record was Dead Language by the Flatliners, which does not seem, when I say it right now, all that, doesn't make me sound like a super artistic critic or anything like that. But I fucking love Dead Language. I liked Cavalcade a lot. I think it was a huge step forward from a band that was a ska punk band up until that point, basically, where it was just big, well-written, well-performed punk anthems. Dead Language was not as immediate as that. I didn't really like it at first. It was one of those records that I listened to at first, the first time, after having so much love for Cavalcade, and I was just kind of like, all right, it's not really sticking with me. But usually when that happens, then I'm kind of like a dog on a bone, and I'm like, why don't I like this? I gotta figure out why this record isn't clicking, and then I will listen to the hell out of it, and then all of those bits that are kind of beneath the surface that really make you get into something kind of hook you in. So it was one of those for me. And right now I'm like, I haven't listened to Cavalcade in a long time, and I don't think I want to. Like, I like this record a lot. So Birds of England, fucking song of the year. That is a great song.
I gotta give a top four just because of the top four. My top four, I loved, man. My number four was a Crazy in the Brains. I've talked about them on the podcast before. Like, if you just like straight up classic, like high energy rock and roll, like before 70s hard rock, like almost like Chuck Berry kind of rock. It's fast, it's wild, it's wacky, and it's got a xylophone in it. I love this band, Crazy in the Brains. I've seen them live, they're great. Plus, we got an interview with them coming out kind of soon, so stay on tap for that. Next band, I caught some flack for liking this band, but I really dig this band. I've seen them live 3 times, and they're really, really good. It's Dog Party. It's two young ladies, and basically they play kind of a mix between Ramones core and like early LA punk, and also like a little bit of Patsy Cline. And Dog Party's album is just one of these. It's only like 25 minutes long. Adam, you've heard these albums before. Like, it just starts up, but it doesn't stop. Like, every track builds off the momentum of the last one. Every song is like 2 minutes and just like a perfect song. And most importantly is each of their songs are rocking, but they're unique. Each song has its own identity, you know?
To me, that is the best. I like that record a lot, actually. But yeah, to me, that is the best record where this, like, you know, you don't have a song over 2 minutes and everything just, you know, cranks through it and the whole thing's engaging.
I mean, honestly, in a way, I'm inclined to sometimes say sexism in the punk scene is overstated, but the way these young ladies have got so much blowback, I kind of think maybe this punk scene is really sexist. Like, this is one of the most amazing records I've heard this year. It rocks the hell out, and people are like, it's just two 15- and 17-year-old girls. It's like, it doesn't even matter, man. If this album was like, you know, three fat dudes, I'd love it, you know? I mean, what the hell? You know, it's just a great record, so I encourage people not to be so concerned with the gender of people playing the music. Next band is another brother duo. These guys are twins. It's The Garden. Not a whole lot of people know about this band. This band is hot out in California in the Burger record scene. It's two brothers and they're twins. And they make like just some of the weirdest, most minimalistic punk I've ever heard. Each song is like either like 20 or 30 seconds to like a minute. And the songs are about like the weirdest things. Like the album is called The Life and Times of a Paperclip. And people have said it's about inanimate objects from that object's perspective. I think that oversimplifies it a little bit, but they've got a song called Grass that just goes something like, stepped on, pissed on, cut on, life as a piece of grass. And like, that's the song. It's just so weird. And most people, like, each song is really good, but there's no band that sounds like this. Like, Dog Party rules, and I'm a huge fan of Dog Party, but there are bands that sort of sound like them, you know, the Weirdos, the Ramones, but The Garden, nobody sounds like them. My favorite of the year, and Adam, like you said, is my favorite of the year was not what people would say, oh, you know, he's got excellent artistic critic taste. My favorite of the year was Gwar's album, Battle Maximus. It's not necessarily revolutionary for Gwar, but my favorite list is my, like, literally, what records did John Gentile enjoy the most? Battle Maximus is their first record after the death of their guitar player, Flatus Maximus. And he was the guy that, like, revitalized the band if they had about a 5-year really crappy phase So Guar was really good. They got crappy, and they got really good again when they got Flatus Maximus and Corey Smoot in the band. But he died due to genetic heart condition. So I was really kind of worried about this album. I mean, well, I mean, obviously people had more things to worry about than this. But, you know, I mean, you know, I was hoping, I was concerned that it wouldn't be that great. They brought in a new guitar player. It's great because they didn't try to replicate what Corey Smoot did. But the songs are all really, really good because they had, they're fast and hard, but they evolve throughout the course of the song, which keeps it really interesting. So Guar's Battle Maximus, it's a victory because it's the band coming back from, you know, a pretty tragic situation and making one of their best records.
You see, I think that's the perfect example of what these lists are supposed to be, at least in the context of what Punk News does with them, is, you know, again, like the Flatliners record, the Guar record, you know, it's not, no one's necessarily going to go back in 50 years and hold that up as like the highest piece of art generated in 2013. But for me, it was a thing that I wanted to sit down and listen to more often than not when I sat down to listen to something. And that's how I usually put these things together is yeah, I really look at, yeah, I really look at, and this, and I love that I have stats for this. It's like, I'll look at Last.fm. Or I'll look at my, you know, who's on the top of the list in RDO that I use there. Like, who am I actually listening to the most? And there may be very well be stuff that is, you know, far more deserving of critical laudatory, if that's even a word, right? But I haven't listened to it that much, so clearly it didn't matter that much to me. And if I'm going to put it high on my list just because other critics think it's good, then I'm not really writing a list of stuff that I like. I'm writing a list to try to make me sound learned.
Right.
Yeah.
And to me, a top 10 list is like the top 10 or top 20 list is completely subjective. It's not like saying, oh, this is the most clever the band of the year. This is the record that John Gentile liked the most, right? And that's why we also do the punknews.org best of 2013, which is calculated via math, which is much more objective because it's a random sampling, or maybe not so random, but it's a sampling of people's opinions aggregated together. I think that's more of an objective representation of what is the best of 2013 for the Punk News audience.
Yeah, and I mean, like, not now the and this is why I love our readers list so much. So we have like the overall site list. So on the overall site list this year, the top three records were number three is Nightbirds, Born to Die in Suburbia.
Nightbirds.
They did the album that the album they did the our theme song on this podcast. We love Nightbirds. I love that record. It was like number four on my list or something. I forget. But anyways, Nightbirds is awesome. The next record I actually have not heard, but a lot of our editors liked, which was, is it Deafhaven?
Deafhaven.
Deafhaven. Sunbather, which is on Deathwish Inc., and which I have not heard, but, you know, people like. That's cool. And number one was the Second Restorations record, which I think, you know, again, when you look at like a sampling of the 20 odd people that are involved in somewhere or another with Punk News, you know, Restorations might not have been rocking the top of all of those lists, but it was high on a lot of those lists. So if you want to talk about like bands that are a consensus band, that's as close as you get among the Punk News crew. And then even so, there's people on Punk News that think they're horrible. So, I mean, that's how the math averages out. Now, of course, then we posted the, overall site list today, which was the actual list that was voted on by people. So if you go on to Punk News and you're reading a record review and you click the little star rating under the review, that this is all of that shit added up. And you know, I can do the top. Let's see here. I can do the top. I can give you the top 10 from that list because it seems like any record that people were angry that we didn't include on the editors' lists is on this one. So it was Alkaline Trio, Direct Hit, Captain We're Sinking, The Flatliners, Reviver, Red City Radio, Iron Sheik, A Wilhelm Scream, Off With Their Heads, and then surprising to me, Bad Religion's True North, the top voted album on Punk News this year. And this is why I like this list, because when we posted the editors' lists, everyone was bitching, where's Reviver? Where's Captain We're Sinking? And like, I don't want to claim that anyone was astroturfing or everything, but it seemed like the whole Captain We're Sinking street crew was out because like there was just like comment after comment about where's Captain We're Sinking? Where's Captain We're Sinking? And yeah, it wasn't there, but here it is. It's on the site list by you, the people that actually read Punk News. So there you go.
I mean, honestly, that band was almost like a dark horse to me because I mean, I had heard of them, But I mean, even in the comments section, and you don't see that much about this band, or you don't see a whole lot of news submitted about them. But people are like, "Captain, we're singing. This band changed my life, man." You know, and so I was surprised by that. I was also surprised by Bad Religion taking the number one spot. I guess it just goes to show that if you're a legacy act, people will like what you do. But I guess most importantly is, A, the aggregate punknews.org list and the staff editor list were pretty similar, honestly. And second of all, I was surprised as to how, and I don't mean this as a negative, it's more of a statement, is how org core centric the reader's top 20 or top 10 list was. It's a very org core list.
Yeah, and I think that that's it goes to, I think, leads a little bit of credibility to the fact that this org core sound that we've joked about a lot is a thing. It's not that it's something that we created or anything like that, but as far as as far as it being, you know, something that you could put your finger on and say, yeah, this is a pretty defined little subgenre that people seem to consider it, you know, it, when you see a list like this, then that makes sense. Now, the interesting thing too, though, is that I look at the readers list and I think, if that was the list of a single one of our editors, I would think, God, that person is boring.
Yeah, so true. So true.
Right? Which is okay, because this isn't the opinion of one person. But and I think that's the part of this that I think I have a hard time. I don't know why people don't get this. People will look at like our lists and they'll look at like bands that you or I will, like, I've got a bunch of weird Canadian indie rock on mine. You've got a bunch of hip hop. You've got Gwar. Like, no one else is talking about Gwar. Right?
I'm talking about Gwar.
So, and then, yeah, we have some of these overlap records that show up, but they're overlap records. The point here is that everyone kind of has their own thing that they're into, and that's what makes them
beautiful.
Interesting as being a part of the whole. If all of our editors, you know, posted basically the reader's overall list, then I'd be a little bit worried that we'd just be incredibly myopic in what we're talking about. Not adventurous at all. Not trying to, you know, expose people to anything other than what they completely expect to be exposed to. And so we don't want to do that. So, you know, that it's totally cool that this is the site list, and this is what I expect the site list to be. But I think that you got to look at this and then look at what an individual person's going to write and not hold them up one-to-one against each other, because I don't think there is an individual person that will only have listened to these records. And, you know, I couldn't call that like that's not a well-balanced music diet to me.
There's one individual person and his name is Chris Moran. This is basically the Chris Moran list.
This would have been the Chris Moran list. Ah, Chris, where'd you go?
We did get a very interesting and well thought out letter from a fellow named Mark, who lives up in Adam's neck of the woods, generally, that being Canada. And he actually brought up some salient points, and the letter's kind of lengthy, but I think we'll just read the whole thing, because Adam's a lot to talk about here. He makes some interesting points and a lot of stuff I'd like to address. So I think maybe I'll just plow through the whole thing should we plow through the whole thing and then talk about it, or read it and then talk about pieces and then continue onwards?
No, you plow through it. Plow through it.
All right, here we go. This is Mark from, I think, Ontario, correct? Mark from
Ottawa.
Ottawa, yes.
And if he's from Ottawa, I don't know why he isn't talking about the Steve Ademic band, because they're from Ottawa and they fucking rule. Anyways, go.
So anyway, Mark, here's Mark's thoughtful letter. Hello, Punk News Podcast. Just wanted to provide some podcast listener feedback in regards to the staff best of 2013 picks. This would be the staff aggregate score. I haven't really followed these lists that closely in the past, but with so little new punk rock being put out these days, I decided to take a look this year to maybe discover a new band and to see whether or not a few releases of what I consider to be the best would appear. I know rating music is a totally subjective thing. We all have different taste buds, and in a genre like punk, we all have lesser-known pet bands we want to push everyone out onto everyone else. But given that the title of the site is punknews.org, there should be a focus on punk rock, right? I read the site to stay informed about punk rock. I want to discover new punk rock bands. I was horrified to see not one staff member listed what I would consider to be the best album of the year, not even at the lowest list level, like 18 or 19 or 20. The album, Transplants in a War Zone, wasn't listed. Not exactly an unheard of pet band, Yes, I'm sure Adam White and Brian Yancey would laugh at me and make Muppet vocal jokes. And I guess they're saying you have a Muppet voice, Adam. Muppet vocal jokes and comment on how dumb face tattoos are. Punk rock is, despite whether or not it's cool to express openly, a cliquish underground style of music that usually attracts people who are in it for the long haul. I would say anyone who does not like the title track In a War Zone is not a punk rocker. Period. Yes, that's a biased punk police statement. Tim Armstrong is nearing 50 years of age and is constantly declaring in interviews that he is a punk rocker until the day he dies. Regardless of whether or not you even like the Transplants, you should feel pride in that if you are a punk rocker, then Tim Armstrong is. I don't like Bad Religion, but I feel they are as legit can be and would feel pride in a statement like that coming from them just the same. Tim likes and experiments with all styles of music, but always flies the flag of a punk rocker first. He released a song a day for 365 days straight. Country, folk, punk, rock, hip-hop, ska, reggae, all styles. He was playing three shows a night on the last Rancid Transplant Tim Time Bomb tour this year. Put that in perspective. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here. This is not a rant from someone upset that tried English... This is not a rant from someone upset that the band... tried the Epitaph sound made famous by bands like Rancid is no longer king. It's from someone who believes that a person like Tim Armstrong should have appeared on a punknews.org best of list as least as many times as Beyonce or Tegan and Sarah. I put Tegan and Sarah in my list. You could even approach from a purely technical standpoint and just listen to the beats Travis Barker puts down. Buddy, behind that kit, and then he says, John G, listing Janelle Monáe? Shame. I'm sure she has some good tunes, but is she a punk rocker until the day she dies? How often does she appear in your news articles? This is this top 40 RNBnews.org? I believe Punk News has a duty to represent punk rock. If your best of list isn't connected to punk rock, then don't post it on punknews.org unless you like reading long essays from people like me. Just drop the pop and indie albums from your list and make it a best of 15 and I'll shut up. Yes, the odd story about a loosely connected pop star or celebrity encounter makes sense from time to time. Those are actually my favorite stories. But when a person like Tim Armstrong, who is proud to be a punk rocker and does so much within a calendar year, is not even mentioned in the best of lists over the likes of Beyonce, someone has to cry foul. Or maybe the site is just staffed with people who are not punk rockers until the day they die. Adam Eisenberg's list is top-notch, though. Good stuff I'll be checking out. Still love the podcast. Thanks, Mark. So Mark brought up a lot of good points. Adam, I'll let you dig into this first.
Well, you know what? Let's play In a War Zone, and we'll come back and talk about it.
Fair enough. This goes straight out to Mark. Mark, this is In a War Zone by the Transplants, just for you. In a war zone. 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 Make a wild move. In a day.
It's worse than it seems. Play your part, play the role. They take your life, they take your soul. In a war zone. In a war zone. Take a war that exists between us. I have to tell you now,
on the Punk News Podcast. Adam, I got to say, I'm not a huge Transplants fan. I kind of like them. I do think the new Transplant album is the best Transplants album.
Hmm. I haven't actually heard the new Transplants album, which I guess is part of the problem here. I mean, I was the world's biggest Rancid fan for a while, and I really liked elements of the first Transplants album. I mean, it had Eric Ozzie from the Nerve Agents on there, which was awesome. You know, and then like everyone else that, or at least everyone on Punk News that seemed to chip at him a lot, I was not super cool on the skinhead rabidness of it. And then the second record just didn't do it for me. And then as such, I kind of ignored this one. But man, yeah, that first Transplants record had a bunch of like Vic Ruggiero stuff on it, you know, had Eric Ozzie on it. Like there were some good contributions on that first one. So I'll give him that. I think that there's, of the points that he raised here, and I'm trying to kind of figure out which is the best way to go about this, because, oh, I mean, on the one hand, yeah, by all means, keep writing us essays like that. I do want that. So if we're going to keep getting like, you know, passionate feedback from people, and the way to do it is that we put a bunch of pop stars on our year end list, then I'm going to keep doing that. So you did not discourage me from doing that, buddy. I think that part of the issue here is, and this is going to sound super unpunk because it is. When you're looking at a list like a person's year end list, at least on Punk News, we've been looking at the year end list as really it is an honest representation of the stuff that you've been listening to that year. What it isn't is it's not something that we put someone on because they deserve it. It's not a lifetime achievement award. It's not, you know, we need to toast Tim Armstrong for being such a fucking warrior this year. It's, you know what? When I look at the amount of stuff that I listened to this year, I listened to way more Nico Case than I listened to the Transplants. And that unfortunately puts her higher when I actually do an honest list. And I think that's how we've just kind of always done them. I like, at least me in my realm as a person that helps make decisions about how Punk News works, I like seeing the individual tastes of the people that are involved. I like seeing that exposed. I like seeing that, you know what? Yeah. You know, a lot of us like the Restorations record or the Nightbirds record or whatever, or the Direct Hit record, but that's, you know, that's where all that Venn diagram connects. Elsewise, we're always listening to other stuff. And I like seeing that. I like hearing that. I like seeing that, like, for example, you know, like you, John, and a couple of other people, you know, they're listening a bunch of like hip hop stuff. And like, I have no vocabulary in hip hop at all. I couldn't tell you what's good or what's bad or who the people are or what the big records are.
It's Saint Clair Posse. That's
classically or in the year or anything like that. So I think it's cool that there's people that are involved with Punk News that are into that. And in the same time, I'm not really expecting anyone to give, you know, too much of a shit that I really think that like Dan Romano's, you know, record where he's basically singing like Lee Hazelwood is very good. But that's okay. That's, again, that's my weird little area. So I've never felt that our lists need to be what is the punkest thing that existed. At least if, as far as the individuals are concerned on the site, I'm not too concerned with us being the arbiter of what's punk or not. I like that basically the, you know, the voted on list that our readers put together, that I think represents a little bit closer to what Mark here, I think, would ideally like to see. But as far as like the individuals on the list, are the individuals that are writing lists for the site? Yeah, I want to hear whatever weird shit that you're actually into. That's more interesting to me, at least as me. And yeah, it is.
I think Mark brings up a bunch of good points. One of the things he says, though, is like, you know, well, first of all, Mark, I gotta stand up for Janelle Monae. Janelle Monae rules. I mean, the older, like, you know, when you're 15, 16, 17, you know, every 4 or 5 months, or even like 2 or 3 months, you hear a record that just blows your mind. Like, I've never heard anything like this before ever, you know? And it's like, oh my God. And as you get older, you still find those records, but it's less and less. True, Adam?
Yeah, I'd say that's true.
So I heard this. I mean, I love Stevie Wonder's classic period from the 70s, his five classic albums. I love George Clinton, Funkadelic. And Janelle Monáe's album is kind of like Stevie Wonder mixed with George Clinton, mixed with sung by an incredibly great singer. And her record, it was so good, Adam, that not only did I go out and buy the deluxe edition of the album, I bought her first two albums, too, and they're all great. So Janelle Monáe is awesome. I mean, you guys should all check out Janelle Monáe. She is great. That record really surprised me because, I was only vaguely aware of her existence, and I heard that record, and I'm like, wow, this record is so, so good. That being said, is the Punk News Editor's List isn't their favorite punk records of the year. It's their favorite records of the year. And I don't think there's hardly anybody out there that the only thing they listen to is punk rock. Like, how many people really only listen to punk rock and don't listen to rock, don't listen to hip-hop, don't listen to soul? You know, all they listen to is punk rock. But also, it's almost impossible to do a top 10 favorite punk records because then you get into the nasty area of defining what is or is not punk, you know? Like, I mean, obviously... Well, I mean, you know, is Bad Religion punk? They're a pretty huge band. They make a lot of money. Is Rancid punk? They make a lot of money. Are they punk? I kind of think so. You know, is The Garden punk? Are they more indie, you know? And so you're better off just doing your favorite records of the year rather than your favorite punk records. And also, I would say this is probably where Punk News rises above the vast majority of other websites that do top 10, top 50, top 100 records. The Punk News editor's favorite records truly are their favorite records. It's what they really like the most. So it's a genuine accounting of their taste. Whereas other websites, I kind of think, try to make it look like they're cool, or they try to make, like, this is what we think is cool to prove that we have good taste. And so it's really not a genuine list. And a lot of those records, as you, if you look back on those lists 3 years from now, 4 years from now, a lot of it is like one-hit wonders, just junk, you know, that people forget about, but they were hot at the moment of the top 10 list.
Yeah, so, and I think that, like, coming off that, there's a certain amount of hubris that you got to have to be able to say, these were, of all of the music that was released this year, this was the best music. I mean, I think we're a little bit more honest in that ours are more like, of the 30 records that I actually listened to this year, that's a higher number than that, but, you know, of the records I actually listened to this year, of the records that I actually seemed to give a shit about, the ones that I sought out, of the records by the bands that marketed themselves to me better than the ones that are still obscure, these are the ones that I liked the best. And that's really what our stuff turns out. If we were strictly to kind of do this as this was the bar none best punk rock of the year, that would have expected us, I think, to have heard all of the punk rock released in the year and then compared and contrasted it. And we're far too much of a decentralized volunteer, you know, duocracy kind of an organization here for us to have by any means have heard all of the stuff to actually make that judgment call.
Yeah, but I mean, not only websites that do sort of make that claim, it's phony baloney because that, you know, that the people writing the list haven't really listened to all those records. It's impossible to do. Even someone working full time could not really survey all the punk rock records or all the cool records and really make an informed opinion. It's phony baloney. So you're better off, you know, making your, just, you know, saying, here are my favorite records. And plus, you know, just because it's punk rock doesn't mean we can't look outside our little world. I think that the more you know about other music, the more special you regard punk rock, because the greater understanding you have of what it does special. And also, you're less likely to get burned out on punk rock. If all you listen to is D-beat, you're going to get pretty bored of D-beat, you know? Where I still love Discharge as much as I did when I first heard him, because I don't only listen to D-beat, you know? But I wanted to address one other thing here, and what was the other thing that I wanted to address that I'm forgetting? Like we said, is the top 10 lists are very subjective. But in our defense, I mean, I would say we have not ignored the transplants when it comes to news and reviews. I mean, if you go back on the site, we actually talked quite a bit about the new Transplants album. And yours truly even interviewed Skinhead Rob about the new Transplants album. And I got to say, I'm going to pat myself on the back here. Adam, I think my review with Skinhead Rob is probably the most interesting interview with Skinhead Rob to date. I'm just going to say that. Because he and I avoid the cliche things and get to what's real, what's hit, what's true.
Well, having seen and read all Skinhead Rob reviews and interviews on the internet... No, but you know what? I mean, again, I really liked getting this email. I like hearing that people are passionate about things. I think it's, you know, there's a certain amount of ball. It takes a certain amount of balls to go stand up and take a band that I think is like, is pretty quote unquote uncool, like the Transplants, and you know, to go to us and say like, hey, fuck you guys. You should have paid more attention to the Transplants. So, you know what? That's cool. And if In a War Zone was your jam this year, then In a War Zone was your jam. You can, you know, fly that flag as high as you'd like. And I encourage you to.
And of course, I got to say, this is Mark's letter was really, really good. This is my favorite kind of letter. I mean, it's not just an attack on us, but it's also not just telling us how great we are. It, you know, it's a truly independent, informed opinion. So, Mark, good job on that letter. As always, the readers and the listeners can reach us at podcast@punknews.org.
Who tells us how great we are?
We get a couple. Well, Jesus.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's his job, right?
Yeah, yeah. Santa.
Mm.
My mom.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom.
So, no. All right, should we talk about, did other things happen this week? This is like the doldrums of news. There's not really a lot of news that's going on.
Yeah, we got a couple things we can blast through.
Let's talk about some stuff. So if you are a fan of Mr. Brian Fallon there from the Gaslight Anthem, he appeared at one of the Bouncing Souls annual Home for the Holidays shows in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and he debuted a new side project called Molly and the Zombies. The band features bassist Kathleen Popper, singer-guitarist Brian McGee, and drummer Randy Schrager. Okay. Now, there is a like a 22, 26 or something like that minute video of their set that's posted on Punk News right now. A word of caution if you really, really want to check this out. They recorded this thing with some sort of camera that makes all of the notes on the bass sound like farting. So it's a little bit of a slog. So if you're really super curious, go check it out. It might be better for you to wait until there's an actual song online that was not recorded with a GoPro. So yeah, but that's there. Check it out.
Yeah. I'm not anti side projects, but it seems anymore every band has like four side projects associated with it. Cause Brian Fallon also has the Horrible Crows. And he's got his solo stuff too. So I don't know why everybody feels any, like, I think more and more people are demanding that bands don't deviate from a structured sound. So that's why you have so many side projects. I'd rather just see bands being, you know, more fearless and doing different stuff if they want to do different stuff.
But I am with you. Like, could you imagine if the fucking Clash had to record a different thing for every weird turn they took on Sandinista or something like that?
But, I mean, now they would have to. Now Sandinista would have been a side project from London Calling. And then Combat Rock would have been another side project, you know?
So, yeah. I don't know. I guess partly I got to imagine that what happens with a lot of these bands is that, like, you know, even though it's not something that they would be averse to doing as the full band, there might just be logistical reasons why, you know, all the members of the band can't be involved in that thing. And if you're going to call it the Gaslight Anthem and, you know, two of the guys aren't there, you might just decide to call it something else. Or...
Yeah, I honestly, due to modern technology, because more and more bands live like across, I mean, back in the day, bands were like gangs, you know. In the early days of the Clash, they were like a gang. They all lived together. Black Flag, you know. Circle Jerks all lived in L.A. The Ramones all lived in New York. Now bands, you know, one guy's in San Francisco, another guy's in Maryland, and they can, like, you know, practice and record stuff via online. Whereas I wonder if it's just these side projects just because there's people in the same place at the same time. I don't know.
Damn this internet. So.
Damn you, internet. Speaking of internet, Franz Nicolai, formerly of World in Front of Friendship Society and the Hold Steady, is using the internet to fund his next album. He's got a new album coming out called To Us the Beautiful. It's being produced by Jay Robbins, who's got a Discord connection. Then, of course, he's a pretty famous producer in his own right. Oh, and actually, Jay Robbins has worked with Against Me, and Franz Nicolai was briefly in Against Me as sort of like a hired gun type character. The album's supposed to come out in 2014. You can pre-order it now, but he's got something interesting. If you give him enough bucks to pre-order, then he will record a cover song for you. So, Adam, two questions. Are you excited for the new Franz Nicolai release? Second, what's your opinion of artists being beholden to the consumer to fund their art and make art in accordance with the consumer's wishes?
Well, I think that I like the way that Franz is doing it here. where, you know, he'll record a cover song if you want. He'll do a little Skype concert for you if you want. He'll write you a custom song for 500 bones if you want to pay him for it. I think that's kind of cool because if, you know, this stuff costs money, so you're going to be beholden to someone. So, you know, I would say, you know, better be beholden to a bunch of guys that are passionately, you know, chipping you 300 bucks here and there than being beholden to, you know, the whims of your classical cartoon villain cigar smoking record executive who has you on hook for like 30 grand. But
true.
I've never been in either situation, so I don't really know if either of those are necessarily a laudable place to be. But hey, I like Franz Nicolai. I want to hear this. You know, I'm totally into whatever he's got coming next. So, and I don't begrudge him doing this stuff because, you know what? It's more direct interaction with fans and with people that give a shit about what he's doing than, you know, he might get otherwise.
Yeah, I might actually be seeing Franz Nicolai tomorrow night. And I think Eric Peterson of Mischief Brew might be there. I don't know. So anyway, if it's not too much snow, nothing else is going on, I'll probably swing on down. My only concern, in a way you're right, Adam, in a way it's better to be beholden to the fans, I guess, than record executives. But on the other hand, it's like I get very nervous when artists are forced to make art that their patron demands. It's almost like medieval England, where the only thing, medieval Europe, where the only thing you could paint was either a picture of the king about how great he was, or religious pictures, and anything else, then you would get, you know, locked up for, or you couldn't fund. So I know Nightbirds had something on their Twitter. They said, "Oh, thanks to Punk News for making us number three or whatever they were. If this was 1992, we could be living, our band could be living comfortably off those accolades." And so I just think it's unfortunate that bands really have a hard time earning money these days, you know.
So yeah,
that's a central point. But on the other hand, it's like Jesse Michaels says. We interviewed Jesse Michaels a while ago, and we said to him, you know, what do you think of artists making money off their art? And he's like, well, I think it's the icing on the cake. Better an artist be rewarded for their art than for flipping burgers, which is a waste of talent. So, I mean, honestly, like, let's say Franz Nicolai makes the album he wants to make, and instead of also flipping burgers, he writes tunes that other people want. Well, that's better than him flipping burgers, isn't it? You know? So
it is. I mean, there is a potential downside. You know, if let's say a whole bunch of people want a Franz to record a whole bunch of cover songs, and he is just not feeling this stuff that they want him to cover, but he's going to do it because they're paying him. You know, you could have a negative artistic consequence from doing that, but I would argue that the negative artistic consequence of flipping burgers for a long time instead of actually playing music might be more. So, you know, pick your poison.
Fair enough. This is a hot tour coming through that a lot of the punk news people are excited about. Lawrence Arms, Great Apes, Nothington, The Copyrights. I think people are excited about all those bands, but especially Lawrence Arms, because I don't think they've done a big tour in a while. It starts in February in Arizona, goes to the West Coast, and then comes all the way over to the East Coast, wrapping up March 8th in Baltimore, MD. Adam, I mean, I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about this, but people are excited about this new Lawrence Arms record.
People are very excited about the new record. It's going to be on the, you know, there's very little that they will do that will prevent them from being on the top of a whole bunch of lists come end of this year. So, yeah, they are one of the big bands this year. And I'm sure this tour is the first of a whole bunch of support that they're going to put behind this because they've been, you know, they haven't been touring as the Lawrence Arms. They've been doing a bunch of side projects, but not as Lawrence Arms for a long time. So, There's demand. I mean, man, we saw them at Pooza Fest a couple years back. Kira and I we didn't see their main set because we couldn't even get into the venue where their main set was going. And then they showed up at this little venue that we were watching bands at and played this secret show at like 1 a.m. And the response from the crowd that did not even necessarily expect them to be in that venue at that time was insane. So there is a lot of people that want to see the Larrys right now. So, yeah, there you go. The dates are on Punk News, so you can go see it. We got to just touch on Bomb Music Industry. We talk about them a lot, given those final shows that are coming up. But they have gone. They have announced the support for the upcoming two shows in Brooklyn. The Slackers, Lemuria and Hoplong, will play the January 17th show, while Andrew Jackson Jihad and Cheap Girls will play the 19th show. So there you go. The Slackers. That is really cool.
Yeah, honestly, I thought, I mean, I'm not dissing the Slackers, but I thought they were bigger than that. But maybe they are, but they're just like being cool and playing with Bond Music Industry.
I think they're showing some respect there. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a really interesting kind of lineup for me there. So anyway, so that's there. you do this next one, because I'm gonna die.
So anyway, come give Johnny G a daps at the last Bob the Music Industry show. 90% I'm gonna be there. Come say hello. Meanwhile, No Idea Records, which you know a lot of org readers love, they announced a couple of new 7-inches. Two that I think, actually three, will probably be exciting to our readers. The first two is a split 7-inch featuring Sunshine State and Dead Bars, and there's another a split 7-inch between Post-Teens and Big Eyes. Also, Creepoid and the Tim Version will have some new records coming out this year, as well as Radon is issuing a remastered version of 1998's album 28. So, not a whole lot of news there, but people like Post-Teens, that's a cool band. People love Big Eyes, that's a cool band. So, just to stay on the lookout for that.
All right, we're going to wrap it up this week just talking about some Tony Sly memorial news. So the TonySly.org website has announced the launch of a sticker campaign to help keep the legacy of the late No Username vocalist alive. So the stickers, they say, never forget Tony Sly. And folks are encouraged to stick them on shit and to send pictures in, and they're going to make a little gallery of that. You can print your own stickers with a little template there, or purchase them online from the Fat store. And some guys in the comment section on Punkies were saying that if you order stuff from Fat, they're throwing in some of those stickers for free. So, yeah, you can find more info about that via the link on Punk News. And, of course, Fat released the Songs of Tony Sly, a tribute last year, with all proceeds going to the Tony Sly Memorial Fund. So you can find it all that on the org.
And I think that wraps up today's podcast. Adam, do we have another tune that we want to hit the kids with?
Okay, is there anything we can play from this big batch of stuff that we just talked about here? Do we have a Post-Teen song? We should play a Post-Teen song. Let's see. Do I have a Post-Teen song sitting around? I have a Post-Teen song somewhere. This is going to be a Post-Teen song.
Bam,
I don't
post-teens.
Even know which one it is yet.
Post-Teens! Post-Teens! Poteen. Again, for listening to the Punk News Podcast and the Post-Teens. Adam, thanks for being my partner in crime as always.
All right, well, I guess we'll next week.
And as always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions expressed of the people making them exclusively, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of punknews.org, particularly the editor's top 10 best of list. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org, and as always, big round of applause, big ups, big thanks to our main sound guy who had a track on my mixtape from this year, Sound Guy Nairman. Thanks as always, and as always, we will see you, crew, next week.